From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. For far too long, human societies have developed artificial technology to combat disease, both in humans and in our food sources. We've used chemical warfare on plants and overused antibiotics in ourselves to treat mundane diseases. But today we are seeing the growth of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And as our understanding of bacteria grows, scientists are realizing that an over-reliance on chemicals to protect ourselves may be coming back to haunt us. A new book by an environmental toxicologist suggests that with our greater understanding of the natural world, we can develop methods to work with nature instead of against it in order to stave off disease. Emily Monison is an environmental toxicologist and writer, independent scholar at the Ronan Institute, and an adjunct professor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She's written Unnatural Selection, How We Are Changing Life Gene by Gene, Evolution in a Toxic World, How Life Responds to Chemical Threats. She's also the editor of Motherhood, The Elephant in the Laboratory, Women Scientists Speak Out. She joins me to discuss her newest book, Natural Defense, enlisting bugs and germs to protect our food and health. Welcome to the program, Emily.
Hi, thank you, Sonali. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. So first, let's lay out what the issue is. And I did it not as well as you've done in your book, where basically us, you know, using a sledgehammer to kill an ant has ended up with us not having the defenses we have relied on to protect us. How do you lay out the problem that, in a sense, we have created for ourselves in our bodies and in our environment?
Well, I think you did a good job of it. But basically, over the past, say, 100 or 50 years or so, as you mentioned, we've developed a lot of kind of chemical cures, both for human health and agricultural health. And what we're realizing is, you know, and when we first had those, they were pretty good. They, you know, helped us manage pests and pathogens. But what we now know is that there are consequences of relying so heavily on chemicals.
And antibiotics, to be fair, have saved millions of human lives across history, right?
Yeah. Antibiotics have been essential. They're, you know, and so the problem is that we're losing the benefits of these things in part because we've overused them. And so, as you mentioned, resistance is a big problem, antibiotic resistance in particular. And on the farm, even overuse of pesticides, along with, environmental problems of using pesticides, there's the issue of resistance as well. So most pests, whether they're insects or weeds, have also evolved resistance to a lot of the herbicides and insecticides. So they're becoming less useful. And in turn, people are using more and more. So the question is, what do you do about that? And so that was sort of where this natural defense book started off is what do you do about that? How do we manage pests and pathogens and tread more lightly and have less reliance on the chemicals that we've been using, cut back on that chemical use? And as you also mentioned, we have over the past 50 or 100 years have made a lot of advances in our understanding of both ecology, whether it's soil ecology, or ecology within the human body, most recently the microbiome that everybody's heard about, the gut microbiome and the skin microbiome, and then genetics and understanding genetics and evolution and all these things much better. And so now it's kind of opened the door to trying to manage pest and pathogen in a more sort of ecological evolutionary way instead of just hammering them with chemicals.
Right. Now, you write in your book about how, you know, you, when your children were young, treated their ear infections with antibiotics, and you felt good about that because that was at the time what doctors recommended. And of course, what we now know is that you can decimate the gut bacteria of a child by simply, you know, prescribing antibiotics to treat something that may not even necessarily need antibiotics. Don't we need to also change our culture as, you know, not just scientists and technology folks in the technology sector, but we as an just ordinary people, parents, need to change our approach and our thinking about how to treat disease in ourselves?
Yeah, we do. And so one thing is we need to probably be more patient. And it's very hard. You mentioned my daughter. Well, of course, when your kid is sick, you want them cured. And so it's hard to see them suffer. But one of the things that would really help in this is if we knew the infection was really an infection that could be treated. And so towards the end, I write about new technologies and diagnostics. And so I think that this is coming along, being able to very quickly identify whether or not there's an infection that can be treated, what the infection is, and even whether or not that infection might have antibiotic resistance. And so what this would do is enable physicians to be able to treat that infection better, more accurately, with the right antibiotic or no antibiotic if it's something that can't be treated. And so these kinds of things, these rapid diagnostics are coming along, I think, probably pretty quickly into offices and hospitals, I think.
It might not seem an obvious issue to someone who's coming at this as a layperson, but how are our microbiomes and our bodies connected with the microbiomes we find in nature, in the soil? Should we be looking at these as connected systems?
Oh, well, that's a good question. So in some ways, probably yes, and I think that will probably bear out the more we learn. What I had written about really is that them as kind of analogous or sister systems or analogous systems, so that if we think about the our own gut microbiome and that we're really an ecosystem of lots of microbes and viruses and fungi and protozoa. And it's the same thing with soil. There's also a soil, a rhizobiome, a soil microbiome. And so working with these systems and protecting these systems rather than eradicating everything just to fend off one pest doesn't really make any sense whether you're talking about soil or human microbiome. So those, in that way, it's a very similar situation about how do you manage them and how do we think about them. The benefits from them, our gut microbes provide us with nutrition. They help stave off other sort of more aggressive infection. And the same people are finding in the soil. So microbes help provide nutrients to plants, and they can help stave off more aggressive pathogens that can cause problems.
And so the result of the overuse of antibiotics on our bodies has been the rise of resistant bacteria like MRSA and these dangerous diseases. And then what is the result of overuse of chemicals in nature been? We use pesticides to keep away pests, to have larger crops. You know, that's a big issue to how to feed the planet. So what have the downsides of chemical overuse on plant life been?
So it's on plant life is, I think there's been less study of sort of the effects of pesticides on soil microbiome, but I think it's pretty clear that a healthier soil system is one that doesn't have all these chemical inputs. But the analogy really in a lot of crops is eradication of, when we're talking about pests, and so if we just shift from bacteria to now insect pests, by using these broad spectrum insecticides, growers are killing off beneficial insects as well, you know, the insects that might come in and kill the pest insect. So it's similar.
So there's an analogy there to sort of the bacterial level and the pest level, none of which is helpful to the planet and to our place in the planet in the long run. So let's talk about the solutions, because you say your book is about solutions. So knowing what we know, for example, within humans, there's good bacteria and bad bacteria. Let's first focus on the human body itself. Knowing what we know, how can science harness this idea of good bacteria versus bad bacteria to treat infections in humans? You know, particularly where children are concerned, bacterial infections can really kill you.
Yeah, so there's two, I wrote about two different kind of options here. And one is with thinking about the gut microbiome, I wrote about a particular infection that's an opportunistic infection. So it's the kinds of infections that come along when you've used, say, a lot of antibiotics or you're compromised in some way, and that allows this overgrowth of a particularly nasty kind of bacterium. So in this case, it would be a C. difficile infection, Clostridium difficile. And so this is where you hear about fecal transplants and things like that. So you're actually, the solution to this particular problem, which is a gut infection, and it can be very bad and potentially fatal, is to replace that unhealthy gut microbiome that has this bad bacterium that's overgrown with one that's healthy, and so providing that through a fecal transplant. The other kinds of solutions are to kind of, as I wrote, ally with nature using other kinds of microbes that can target very specific pathogenic bacteria. So instead of using a broad spectrum kind of antibiotic, there are other kinds of treatments. In particular, I wrote about bacteriophage therapy, which is using viruses that targets very specific bacteria like staph. Recently, I wrote about Pseudomonas aeruginosa, which is another opportunistic kind of infection. You can target those with these viruses that attack only bacteria and very specific bacteria usually. And so these can help sort of control or manage, or might eventually help control or manage these kinds of infections. And I do have to say that often this is not just, you know, we tend to think either or, like we're either just going to ditch the antibiotics and use these. And I don't think that that's really the case. And it's the same thing with pesticides. A lot of these solutions are solutions that are sort of in the gray area. How do we reduce our reliance on those kinds of chemicals? But we still might need them.
Right. I mean, if we use them sparingly, they might be more effective anyway. And then we, you know, I sort of think of it as our reliance on plastic. You know, we've over-relied on plastic and it's come to haunt us, but doesn't mean we need to do away with plastic entirely. We just use it sparingly when it's absolutely necessary because it can be helpful. So these are the sorts of discussions we can and should be having about the environment as well. What about our food sources? There's been a real blossoming of organic agriculture that doesn't rely on pesticides, because we are now realizing more and more that not only are pesticides harming those beneficial insects, they're bad for us. They don't do very good things in our own body, even in small amounts, and especially in children. You know, parents who are aware might go grocery shopping with their Dirty Dozen and Clean 15 lists. What are ways in which our knowledge about how plants respond are being used to grow our food, not just in these small farm scales, but on a larger scale?
Yeah, so there are a couple of different options that I've written about. That one of them is when you mentioned how plants respond, there's a really interesting one where I spoke to a scientist who's using what's called a push-pull system. So when plants are under attack by an insect, they might send out these kind of chemical messages that says, I'm under attack. And that kind of scares off other insects. They don't go there because that plant is already colonized. And so they can use that to their advantage by planting, intercropping these plants that will send out those kinds of messages along with the crop plant. And then that plant also tends to attract the insects to it, the pests. And so if the pests are eating that plant and not the crop, and at the same time sending out the signal that the crop, you know, that area is under attack, it tends to push away other kinds of pests. And so that's sort of a really interesting approach to managing pests. I also write about pheromones, insect pheromones. So using insect scents, and sort of this is the chemical attractants between insects, to do what they call mating disruption. And so when you have a female will send out her chemical scent, her come hither sexy scent, to attract the male insects. And it's a very good attractant, but what people can do is if they understand what the chemical attractant is, they can release it into, you know, produce it, release it in an orchard, say, and flood the orchard with this female scent. And so the males can't zero in on that female anymore, and they become confused and they can't mate, and then you don't get eggs laid on your fruit and you don't get your wormy larvae.
So that's a much more specific and like targeted way to approach pest control.
Yes, and so it's kind of similar to the idea of phage therapy. So a lot of what I write about are, I was more interested in the concepts. How do we do these things differently? So this is a whole, you know, the concept here is to move away from broad spectrum responses to these things, and to try to get more specific. And because we have the kind of technology to do that now, we have the technology to diagnose better, we have the technology to produce these specific chemicals or to identify what the chemicals are that we want to make. So you can target more specifically the pest and leave the rest alone.
So in a way, this isn't a book about going back to the old ways of doing things because we just instinctively know things are better. It's actually a science book that wants to harness new technology. But this sort of new ideology of working in harmony with nature instead of working to beat back nature, does that ideology need to permeate our thinking about the world more?
Oh, I think it totally does. Yes. And I think that's something we had this sort of, you know, human versus nature for the last 100 years or so, when we thought that we had these great chemicals. And there were people who would write about, you know, we'll conquer all pathogens and infectious disease, or we'll conquer all pests.
The Green Revolution. Yeah.
There's the Green Revolution. And there were people saying when DDT came out that, you know, we'll never need another pesticide. And crazy thing. Well, you know, back then it probably didn't seem crazy because those things really were miraculous. But now, looking back, that seemed crazy to think that. And like I mentioned earlier, we understand the sort of inner workings of ecosystems better. We understand the whole sort of microbiology better of systems. And so we can work with these systems and try to maintain them as best as possible while we're still managing the problems that we need to manage.
I also wanted to ask you to comment a little bit about the issue of vaccines. In your book, you have a section on how vaccines are our new information and scientific study can help us develop a different generation of vaccines. Vaccines are a really interesting thing because in some way, they were among that class of approaches to treating diseases that did try to work with nature, right? That did try to harness our body's own immune system to attack diseases, but it's becoming harder and harder to make the kinds of vaccines that we've relied on?
Yeah, well, it's that some of the vaccines, in the way that we used to make them, we don't always get the most effective vaccine. Mm-hmm. And so what I wrote about is sort of some of the biological engineering ways that they can use molecular engineering to both to identify specific targets on bacteria or viruses that are better targets for our immune system. Or sometimes a virus might have, or a bacteria might have, sort of a cloaked kind of like a cloaking device where our immune system can't find it or can't detect it. And that makes it difficult to develop a vaccine. And so what people can do through DNA sequencing is identify places that aren't cloaked, or basically uncloak maybe the infection or the infectious agent, and then make a vaccine against that. So what they can do, and then that would give us a better opportunity, our immune response, a better opportunity to mount a better, stronger immune response once vaccinated.
Well, Emily, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Is there a website that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I occasionally blog at toxicevolution.wordpress.com.
We'll post that as a link on our website later today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
My guest has been Emily Monison, environmental toxicologist and writer and an independent scholar at the Ronin Institute and an adjunct professor at University of Massachusetts Amherst. We've been discussing her latest book, Natural Defense, Enlisting Bugs and Germs to Protect Our Food and Health. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo. Thank you.